This is Greg Columbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. Time now for a look at Wednesday's headlines, and we begin here in Washington as President Obama gets set to begin a couple of days worth of Middle East peace talks with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, as well as Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. Other regional players will be part of the discussions, including Jordan's King Abdullah, as well as Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak, as well as European Union Middle East envoy Tony Blair, who is, of course, the former British prime minister. The president today, in meeting with reporters following talks with the Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel, has said, first of all, he condemns the attacks against Israeli settlers in the West Bank in an attack claimed by Hamas, among others.
There are going to be extremists and rejectionists who, rather than seeking peace, are going to be seeking destruction.
And Obama says if these radicals are hoping to deter the U.S. from standing by Israel, they're sorely mistaken.
But I want everybody to be very clear. The United States is going to be unwavering in its support of Israel's security. And we are going to push back against these kinds of terrorist activities.
The president also thanked Prime Minister Netanyahu for continuing with his trip to the U.S. for these peace talks, despite the tragedy that happened as a result of the work of terrorists in the West Bank on Tuesday. For his part, Prime Minister Netanyahu used even stronger language to condemn those responsible for the deaths of the four people on Tuesday.
Four innocent people were gunned down and seven new orphans were added by people who have no respect for human life or trample human rights into the dust and butcher everything that they oppose.
As for the summit itself, it's still in its early stages. Dinner tonight really kicks off the events with extensive talks, especially on Thursday, perhaps into Friday. We will have full coverage of the Middle East summit as the week progresses. As for other U.S. interests in the Middle East, of course, on Tuesday evening, President Obama going on national television with an address from the Oval Office declaring an end to combat operations in Iraq while saying our commitment there has not ended because 50,000 U.S. troops are still there for advisory and security training roles, and it is quite possible, according to the guests we've talked to, that some of them could see quite a bit of combat over the coming months. The Obama goal is to have all U.S. troops out of Iraq by the end of 2011. Today was the official transfer of authority in Iraq, and Vice President Joe Biden was the top U.S. official there, saying that the U.S. has kept its promise now to return Iraqi sovereignty.
Iraqi troops are taking lead responsibility for their country's security. We've kept a promise made to the American people and to the people of Iraq by drawing down our forces.
But is this decision by the Obama administration to end combat operations now a political decision or a smart strategic move? Retired U.S. Marine Corps General Jeffrey Higginbotham believes it's more of a political move since many of those ongoing troops in Iraq will, in fact, see combat. He also says he's very disappointed in the president's speech because there was no articulation of a greater mission to combat radical Islam and jihad among those who still seek to harm us and our allies, both in Europe and in the Middle East. Meanwhile, the U.S. has launched another way of trying to go after the leader of the Taliban in Pakistan. Baitullah Massoud is already the target of U.S. efforts to either kill or capture him, but now the legal side has gotten involved as well, as explained by State Department spokesman Dan Benjamin.
These charges stem from Massoud's alleged involvement in the murder of seven American citizens at a U.S. military base in Khost, Afghanistan, on December 30th, 2009.
So a warrant has been issued for the arrest and capture of the Pakistani leader of the Taliban. A terrorist incident much closer to home playing out in the suburbs just outside of the nation's capital on Wednesday as a man identified as James J. Lee went into the Discovery Television headquarters in Silver Spring, Maryland, strapped with explosives and carrying a handgun and taking a number of people hostage on the first floor of that building. 1,900 people work in that building, and the vast majority were evacuated, as well as the daycare center. All of those kids successfully reunited with their parents. The ordeal played out for hours on national television over the cable networks, and during the event, the Montgomery County, Maryland Police Chief Thomas Manger explained how this whole crisis began.
At 1 p.m. today, a man entered the Discovery building through the main entrance at Wayne in Georgia. He came in. He was wearing what appeared to be metallic canister devices on his front and back. He also pulled a handgun out and was waving a handgun. We originally had a report that there was a shot fired. We have not confirmed that that, in fact, is the case.
But a little bit later this afternoon, shots were in fact fired, but by police who took down Mr. Lee because they felt he was a legitimate danger to the hostages he was still keeping captive on that first floor of the Discovery Building. So the crisis is now over. He had an extremely bizarre manifesto, a very brief manifesto. Basically, his beef with the Discovery Channel is that he wanted major primetime coverage for what he considers the major crisis of overpopulation, which he believes will destroy the planet. He goes on to say that we need to protect wildlife and stop all human births. Mr. Lee had protested Discovery in the past and had been arrested for much less serious charges a couple of years ago. On the political front today, what we had thought would be happening in Alaska has now officially been declared, and that's that incumbent Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski has stunningly lost her own party's primary for another 6 years here in Washington. At this time last week, she was behind by just about 16 or 1700 votes to Tea Party-type challenger Joe Miller, who had received the endorsement of former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. At that point, Murkowski still believed that many thousands of absentee ballots could still reverse her fortune, but after a full day of counting, it appeared to her that it was all over but the final tally.
We know that we still have outstanding votes to count in this primary, but based on where we are right now, I don't see a scenario where the primary will turn out in my favor.
As for Joe Miller, he is considered a slight favorite to hang on to that seat for Republicans in the U.S. Senate come November, and he says it's important that Republicans now band together and make sure they don't lose the seat to the Democrats.
She conceded the race. I wish her the best. I mean, she fought a hard race. We obviously need to work together to see that this general election comes out successfully.
But will military personnel be able to vote? Alaska, among several states that are defying a federal law passed by Congress last year mandating that states give ample time for ballots to be mailed to troops overseas and give them time to have those ballots mailed back well in time to be counted on Election Day. But Alaska, among other states, defying that order, largely due to their late primary dates, and other states just simply asking for a waiver because they say they either can't or don't want to comply. And apparently the Justice Department is doing nothing to make these states actually take the steps necessary to assure that those who are serving us and defending us in harm's way half a world away actually have their votes counted. The story comes to us from J. Christian Adams, former attorney for the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. He's also with Pajamas Media. You can hear my conversation with him at worldnetdaily.com. You can also hear my conversation there with General Higginbotham, who I mentioned was not impressed with the president's Iraq speech or his decision to end combat operations at this time. That conversation is also at worldnetdaily.com, as well as my visit with Texas Congressman Kevin Brady, who is part of a very diverse bipartisan rally in Houston today, calling on President Obama to lift the moratorium on offshore drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. He says tens of thousands of oil industry jobs are on the line, and it's crippling the local economy the longer this goes on. All of that, worldnetdaily.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.